This is Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. Just ahead on today's show, feathers, tiaras, and a unique sisterhood will rule as Sweet Potato Queen and author Jill Connor Brown heads to the metro area for the local premiere of Sweet Potato Queens, the musical edition. And a new theater company makes its debut in New Orleans with Derek Walcott's Pantomime. Crescent City Stage Executive Director and actor Michael Newcomer will join us. But first, 55 miles from New Orleans, the power of the Mississippi River has punched a new hole into Plaquemines Parish's East Bank. In the past 3 years, it's grown substantially in size, setting off a debate between the state, coastal advocates, and the U.S. Army Corps about its future. The Coastal Desk's Hallie Parker has gone out to see the crevasse and joins us now. Hallie, welcome.
Hi.
Let's start by talking about how this new channel formed and how big is it?
We don't know the exact origin of this new channel. It used to be much smaller and called Bayou Tortillon, but satellite imagery suggests that likely around the time of like the 2019 flood, a rock dam around that bayou's opening might have collapsed. And that's allowed the Mississippi River to force more and more of itself through. And that's led to some eroding of the banks there. And that what was once a smaller bayou has grown more than six times its size. Now it's about 850 feet wide. You really can't miss it when you're chugging past it on a boat. And all of these changes have earned it the new name of Neptune Pass.
Wow. And as the channel has grown, how has that started to change the area around it?
It's a tale of two sides to an extent. On the side of the Mississippi River's main stem, so much of the flow has started passing through the East Bank that it's actually started to slow down the pace of the river as you move south of Burris. And that's led to more sand and mud falling out into the main shipping channel. And actually earlier this year, that required the Corps to dredge where they don't usually need to. And then on the other side of the channel, which empties into this area called Quarantine Bay, satellite imagery shows that the beginnings of a new delta to an extent. So sand from the river water that's coming in, as well as the land that has been eroded and carved out by the channel over time, has started to pile up in that bay and make it a lot more shallow than it used to be. And over time, some scientists and coastal advocates think that that could lead to new marsh creation if it was allowed to continue.
Now, the discussion around Neptune Pass started heating up earlier this year. How are different groups thinking about managing it?
So that is an area of disagreement between the Army Corps and the state. The Army Corps is looking to likely close it, and there's a question of how much that channel will be closed. Right now, they're probably favoring an option that would allow that would close it enough to only allow some small boats to pass through. But the state, as well as coastal advocates, want to see it stay a little bit more open and allow a little bit more of the river to continue to flow through. That way they can see more of that sediment continue to pass into Quarantine Bay and study that area, see how the land is forming, if any land starts to form, especially since they're looking to do more bigger projects like sediment diversions that would kind of mimic what this channel is naturally doing in terms of diverting river water into an area and building land there.
And how does this debate around Neptune Pass fit into the larger conversation around how we think about managing the Mississippi River and ways to rebuild land in South Louisiana?
So yeah, the Corps has kind of long faced criticism over its mandate to prioritize navigational needs above all else. And that's something that Louisiana officials have hoped to change, and they're hoping that starts with this crevasse.
Hallie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Diane.
A new professional theater company, which formed in New Orleans in the middle of a global pandemic, is now finally able to bring live theater to local audiences. Crescent City Stage is launching its inaugural season with Nobel Prize-winning playwright Derek Walcott's Pantomime. Michael Newcomer is one of three co-founders of Crescent City Stage, and he joins us now. Michael, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
I know this has been a long road for you. How did you land in New Orleans, and how are you planning to change the city's theatrical landscape with Crescent City Stage?
I suffer from, I think, an all too often told story of I met a girl who's from New Orleans, and about a month after we met, somebody ominously said to me, New Orleans girls always come home. And that's how I ended up here. We were in New York living our, you know, great glory days of acting, and we wanted to start a family, and New Orleans presented an opportunity for us to come home, and my wife Elizabeth, who's also a co-founder, got a job here that brought us to New Orleans, and that's how I ended up here in 2015.
What a nice story.
It is. I, you know, the more I meet people here, the more common that story really is. It's lovely. I'm a military kid, so I don't have a home base. I grew up all over the world. My dad was in the Army. So to come here and be able to be a part of my wife's childhood and it still be the same is a complete opposite experience for me.
Wow. What is the vision for the company?
After 20-some years of traveling the country and doing theater, I've long thought about starting an organization that flipped this sort of traditional nonprofit model on its head and said, what if we took the bulk of the revenue or the available cash and put that towards artists? And what does that mean? What does that look like? So combining a lot of my experience with Liz, my wife, and Yana, our third co-founder's experience, we have 50 plus years between the three of us of theater industry experience. We thought the artist is the thing. Without the artist, there is no art. And thus was born the idea for Crescent City Stage. And our mission is to develop an organization that can provide sustaining and livable wages for artists. And when we say artists, we mean the person you meet when you first arrive at the theater, all the way through the actors on the stage. Everybody who has a hand in putting together the actual product that we have in the marketplace. And New Orleans presented a really wonderful opportunity to do that because A, there weren't a lot of union jobs, and B, it's a cultural beacon of the South. The question we ask ourselves is, what happens if you give the theater arts worker the freedom from a financial burden perspective of not having to have four, five, six jobs? What if art in the theater was the thing that they survived on? What kind of art could they create?
Now, you're calling your first season a season of empowerment, and you're opening with Pantomime. This is Derek Walcott's comedy?
Yes. It is funny. Certainly not to the two folks telling the story, but yes, from an audience's perspective, it is a comedy. It's a complicated subject. It's about race. It's about prejudice. It's about racial identity and colonialism and white versus black. But it's ultimately about two human beings who give themselves permission to have a really difficult conversation about something that we in today's society often try to avoid. So the audience gets to experience it from a comedic perspective, as Derek has couched it. But the two characters in the play are experiencing it in real time, and the catharsis that comes from A, approaching another human being with empathy and sympathy and a love, even, you know, the love between two men to understand where each is coming from. And the audience gets to experience that. It's very fitting, particularly with the social reckoning, if we will, what's happening in our society about our conversation around race and how we tend to shy away from it. And this gives us an opportunity. And as theater should, it should be the place you go to have and see uncomfortable conversations that hopefully enable you to strike up something of the same ilk, you know, the next night at the dinner table. And so Pantomime, even though it was written in the 70s, it's as timely today as it was then in that regard.
Michael, let's set the stage. Where is it set, and what is the storyline?
Pantomime is set in Tobago, and we are on the edge of the island on a veranda in a rundown hotel owned by an Englishman, Harry True, who sunk everything he had left in his life in this hotel to escape a life that had turned south. He lost his little son in a car accident and he came to the island to drink away and watch the sunset like Robinson Crusoe. He employs his handyman servant, Jackson Phillip, who's a Trinidadian by birth and now lives in Tobago, to recreate the story of Robinson Crusoe, except for Harry thinks it might be an interesting idea to flip the roles and have the black man play Robinson Crusoe discovering a white Christian cannibal. So if you know the story of Robinson Crusoe, that reverses it. And then what happens is we have this really interesting, difficult, hysterical, which is a weird juxtaposition, of what happens when you do role reversal. Who can say what? And the play explores that. And these two men spend a morning and an early afternoon together on this veranda, switching roles in the Robinson Crusoe story. So the show runs a brisk 95 minutes. There's no Hollywood ending. It ends with two men who look at each other and agree that there's more work to be done, but what a heck of a way to spend the day together.
Now, you are not only one of the co-founders of Crescent City Stage, but you are also a character in the play.
Yes, I'm also playing Harry True. While he presents himself as ignorant, while he presents himself as prejudiced and racist, I think he exemplifies an ignorance that we oftentimes overlook in calling it out in our society. And what I love about playing him is the realization that he has that he's not doing the best that he can do, that he can do better. And I love his relationship with this beautiful black man that teaches him just how to be better.
Who else is in the cast?
So Michael T. Forrest plays Jackson Phillip. He's the opposite of Harry. Jackson is a really good singer, a really good calypso singer, a really wonderful dancer. He's just wicked smart. And he loves his life. He's a family man, loves to take sea baths, wants to come to work, and then he wants to leave work. And Michael brings Jackson to life in this really beautiful, hilarious, touching, heartfelt way that I think helps tell Derek's story. And of course, Derek went through colonialism. His life in literature was about the sort of white settling of the islands and what that meant for the natives and for their lives and their future. And Michael plays Jackson with a humility and a humanity that is really lovely.
How do you hope, Michael, audiences will connect with this work? And what do you hope they will take away from the performance?
I think the play challenges an audience to look at a white and a black man and not judge them immediately because of a skin color, but listen to them and follow along with their story, their narrative in the piece, and understand at the end of the day that we really all are all just humans. And if we can appreciate each other as humans, my gosh, what kind of a world could we live in? Theater has the ability to change hearts and minds, even if it's as simple as somebody being in the audience that's never seen somebody on stage that looks like them. And I think pantomime, if nothing else, tells the audiences with humility and humbleness and empathy and sympathy, you can have a conversation about your shortcomings as a human and be loved and respected and helped to be better. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But also, some people may just be entertained, right? It's a funny play. it's really funny. I know I just made it sound so like boring, but it is funny. And so you may walk away and just feel really good about seeing a good play. And that's good, too. That's fine, too, because it is about entertainment. So I think it's all of those things at once.
Crescent City Stage Executive Director Michael Newcomer. Best wishes on your new endeavor.
Thank you so much, Diane. Thanks for having us.
Crescent City Stage presents Nobel Prize-winning playwright Derek Walcott's Pantomime. Performances run through September 25th in Loyola University's Marquette Theater. More info is online at crescentcitystage.com. You're listening to Louisiana Considered on WWNO in New Orleans and WRKF in Baton Rouge. I'm Diane Mack. If you could use some excitement in your life, a bold and bawdy musical making its Metro New Orleans debut might just be your ticket to big fun. The Jefferson Performing Arts Society opens its season with Sweet Potato Queens, the musical edition, based on the New York Times best-selling books by Mississippi-based author Jill Connor Brown. Jill will be in attendance for this weekend's opening, and she joins us now. Jill, welcome to Louisiana Considered.
Thank you. Tickled to be here. Can't wait to be at the theater.
It is such a pleasure to talk with you about this sisterhood that has a worldwide following. Tell us, what is a sweet potato queen, and how did you become the queen?
There is no answer that makes it. It makes no sense. I somehow have turned myself into the leader and the object of a worldwide cult, and I can tell you it is the best job I ever had. But there are 10 books now, but there are over 6,500 chapters of Sweet Potato Queen wannabe groups in 37 countries. So my voice in the books is that of a white Southern Christian woman. That's what I turned out to be, some by choice, some not. But the experiences are universal, and there is no line in the queendom. So we say sisterhood, but it's really a family. We are men, women, gay, straight, young, old, black, white, rich, poor, drunk, sober, married, so whatever else. I have the ashes of a dead woman. There was a queen in Arizona that loved the parade more than anything. It's all around our St. Patrick's Parade in Jackson, Mississippi. And she loved it more than anything, and she passed away. And I don't have all of her, but I have some of her ashes in a special box with one of her hats on it. And she rides on my float every year.
Oh my.
So when I say there is no line, there is no line that we do not cross.
Oh, my goodness.
We are the most inclusive organization on the planet.
Well, I think boas and feathers and tiaras will rule the run of this wild musical.
Absolutely.
It's written by Rupert Holmes with music by Melissa Manchester and Sharon Vaughn.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
It's a fabulous show. It is hilarious, and the music is incredible. If you don't laugh out loud, we will refer you to a therapist. It's the people who've read the books will come, and they will have on the most outrageous stuff. And then the people who just, well, it's like a musical. I just thought I would go to the theater. And get there. But then they come back. They'll come back to another show and dress up because they don't want to miss it. It's kind of like Rocky Horror Picture Show, where the audience is in on it, you know.
Yeah. Now, is there a song that crystallizes what the sisterhood is all about?
The whole Sweet Potato Queen thing is, you know, do what makes your heart sing and the money will follow. And so there is a do what makes your heart sing song. It's all about rising above whatever needs to be risen above in your life. And everybody's got something. And so it's the story of several folks and what each one overcame.
Now, the lead actress playing you, Crystal Jim, is an African American actress from Jackson,
Angel.
Mississippi.
Yep, she grew up in my church.
Oh.
And this is not the last time you will see her in J-Pass or in any of the New Orleans theaters. I mean, because now that they have found her, she's going to be a regular. I mean, she can act, but her voice, oh my God. When we get to heaven, I will have her voice. I don't know what she'll get, but I'm going to have that voice. They hired her because she was the best.
Now, the play is fun. And I'd like you to tell us why it's important to just let loose and have fun and just laugh at ourselves every once in a while.
Actual university studies, one of them conducted at LSU, go Tigers, have proven that play is as important to our health and well-being as food, clothing, and shelter. And I don't care who you are, life is hard on a good day. And nobody gets out unscathed. And the dressing up funny and acting stupid like we do, and we know it's stupid, makes it possible to step outside yourself for just a little while and become somebody else for just a little while that doesn't have a worthless ex-husband or a child in therapy or breast cancer or whatever it is that you're dealing with. And it makes you just a little bit stronger spiritually to go back and tote that load when you have to. And in my experience, the load will be there. No one will come and get your problems while you're gone playing.
Yeah. Now, you said that the musical is based on the first book.
Yes.
What's the storyline in the first book?
There is no plot. So a plot was created for this show because it's a collection of stories about the Sweet Potato Queens. So they took some license. I grew up in South Jackson, which is true, but they have me in a trailer, which I did not grow up in a trailer. And the only two caveats that I gave the creators when they were working on it was I said, absolutely no racial, racist overtones. That is not our story. We're the most inclusive organization as such on the planet, and that is not our story or our experience, and that's low-hanging fruit for any story from Mississippi. Just don't go there. And the other was, I am divorced from the father of my child, and so you can't say anything bad about him. And so the husband character is a horrible person, but the baby is mentioned, but he's not the father of the baby. And so that license was taken, just as the plot. They needed conflict, and she needed to have a bad husband, but I said, you know, it can't be the father of my child because I don't want people to think that. But the Tyler character is despicable. Fortunately, thank God, I never had to experience that in real life.
What will be the big takeaway from this show?
You will just feel lighter. Daddy always said there are very few situations in life that you really and truly cannot change. But when you encounter one of those, you got to figure out how to either make fun out of it or make fun of it. And that has served me well.
What do you have planned for this weekend's opening?
Oh, well, we will be there dressed to the nines. And one of my spud studs, Scott Caples, who will come down from Tupelo, he will eclipse everybody in the outfit department. You will be able to see his outfit from space. It will be worth coming to the theater to see what Scott Caples is wearing. I've just given up competing with Scott in that department. So it will just be a warm, friendly, hilarious atmosphere. I can't wait. I love this show, and I can't wait to hear Crystal sing these songs. And she tells me that the entire cast, that the voices are magnificent. I love musicals more than anything. It's my favorite genre, and so I can't wait to hear them.
Jill Connor Brown, author and founder of Sweet Potato Queens. It's been fun talking with you.
I've enjoyed it very much. Hope I will see you at the theater.
Yes.
I expect to see you at the theater.
With my boa.
And your tiara.
Sweet Potato Queens, the musical edition, runs September 16th through October 2nd at Teatro Wego in West Wego, Louisiana. More information is online at jpas.org. From WRKF in Baton Rouge and WWNO in New Orleans, this has been Louisiana Considered. I'm Diane Mack. Thanks to our guest, Sweet Potato Queen and author Jill Connor Brown. Crescent City Stage Executive Director, co-founder, and actor Michael Newcomer. And WWNO's Coastal Reporter, Hallie Parker. Our managing producer is Alana Schreiber, and our digital editor is Caitlin Umholtz. Our engineers are Garrett Pittman, Aubrey Procell, and Thomas Walsh. You can listen to Louisiana Considered Monday through Friday at noon and 7:30 p.m. It's available on Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you get your podcast.
Major support for Louisiana Considered provided by Rouse's Markets, a Louisiana shopping experience, with additional support from Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation.